Hello, this is Mr. Langhorse, and you're listening to the Unit 7 StudyCast, getting ready for our Constitution test. Tonight I'm going to walk you through some of the important points that you're going to need to know for the Unit 7 test. And we have a little bit of background music tonight. It is PodSafe music from the PodSafe Music Network, and the group is called Phase, and the music track that they're playing in the background is Mad Flava. So let's get started. All right, one of the first things you're going to need to really understand to do well on this test is the separation of federalism and powers. You're going to need to understand what are national powers, what are state powers, and what are shared powers. So let's go ahead and start with the national powers first. The following powers are things that only the national government can do: maintain a military, declare war, establish a postal system, set standards for weights, protect copyrights and patents. All of those are things that can be done only by the national government. The things that can be done only by the state government include establish local governments, set up schools, regulate state commerce, make regulations for marriage, and establish and regulate corporations. Those are things that are only allowable under the state powers. Now, there are some things that are shared by both the national and the state powers, and those are called our shared powers. Shared powers include collecting taxes, establishing courts, regulating interstate commerce, regulating banks, borrowing money, provide for the general welfare, and punishing criminals. Those are done only by the shared powers. So I'd encourage you to look on your study packet at the Venn diagram that we did to separate those out. That's an important part of the test. In the past, some students have been tripped up by that. So make sure you look at that information and know that extremely well for the test. Another thing that we studied in this chapter was the process by which a bill is made into a law. And we talked about the 8 steps. Now, the most important thing about the 8 steps that you're going to need to know is the basic chronological order. There'll be a question on the test that asks you some scenarios, and you have to say which one is the correct order for making a bill into a law. The first step is that it's introduced, and it can be introduced in either the House or the Senate. Step number 2, it is taken to a committee. The committee then decides if it wants to kill the bill or move the bill on. If it makes it past the second step, it then goes on to floor action. So either the House debates it and votes on a version of the bill, or the Senate debates it and then votes on a version of the bill. Now, once this is done, it moves on to step 4 if it passes. And since in most cases the bill has changed a little bit along the way, a committee from both the House and the Senate get together to create one version of the bill that then goes back and is voted upon by both the House and the Senate again. If the same version of the bill passes both the House and the Senate, it moves on to step number 5, which is final approval. Okay, so if they vote on it then, it ends up on the president's desk, which is step number 6. The president can then either sign the bill or veto the bill and send it back to the House and the Senate to see if they can override the veto. If the president signs it, then it becomes law. It is possible for the Senate to override a presidential veto if they get 2/3, a majority in both the House and the Senate. So those are the basic 8 steps, and if you know pretty much the regular flow of how that goes, you should be right for the test. We did a flow chart in the study note packet, so if you check out that flow chart, that should help you out quite a bit for the test. Some other things we mentioned that you'll need to know for the test are the number of electoral college votes that Missouri has, and that is 11. We have 9 representatives and 2 senators, and so that gives us 11 electoral college votes in the process of electing the president. And we also talked about how it is possible to gain more total votes in the entire country and still not be elected president. We talked about how that actually happened most recently in the 2000 election between Bush and Gore. Other terms you'll need to know: popular sovereignty. That basically means that the right of the people to rule. When we have a vote, that is the popular part, the majority, and then sovereignty means to rule. So basically, it translates into the people are the ones that rule the government. Another term, federalism. Federalism explains the breaking up of government into state and national levels, once again so that one group doesn't become too powerful. Another term, republicanism. It really has nothing to do with the political party of the Republicans, but rather that the people are the ones that run the government. And in this case, since we can't have a direct democracy where everybody votes on every bill, we elect people to go and do that for us. So we actually have elected officials that do the actual government for us. Separation of powers, again, breaks the government up into three branches so that one branch or one area of government does not become too powerful. So that creates the judicial, the executive, and the legislative branches. We talked about limited government and how everybody under limited government is under the same law. So if I were to come into a room and commit a crime, and the president came into a room and committed the same crime, we would both be held to the same standards, even though he's the president of the United States and I'm just an ordinary citizen. Checks and balances. This is the system set up so that one branch of government does not become too powerful over another. We talked about quite a few cases, including things like vetoes, judicial review by the Supreme Court, needing to approve an appointment made by the president to the Supreme Court. We talked about several different scenarios for that. Militia. We talked about how militia back in the revolutionary days was an emergency gathering of civilians that have pledged to defend their country, and how the militia falls under the Second Amendment today. Habeas corpus, translated to have the body, which means they cannot hold you in a jail without telling you what you're being charged with. So Latin for having the body. We also talked about a reprieve. This sometimes comes about with a governor or a president where they give someone a reprieve or a delayed, let's see how to explain this. If you have a reprieve and you're awaiting execution, for example, they might hold off a little bit and wait until they can check some more evidence or see if there's any more evidence out there. Ratification basically translates into official approval. We talked about the ratification process of the Constitution. Once it was written, it then went to each individual state, and it needed to be voted upon and approved or ratified by each state. The next term, suffrage. Suffrage basically means the right to vote. So if we're talking about the women's suffrage movement, that was the movement to allow women to be able to vote in elections. And we talked about the Bill of Rights, which collectively are the first 10 amendments to the Constitution, passed very shortly after the Constitution itself was ratified. All right, I do want you to know several of the specific amendments that we mentioned in this unit, most notably the 26th Amendment. This is the second to most recent amendment that we have, and this allows 18-year-olds the right to vote in the United States for president. The 22nd Amendment, which limits a president to 2 consecutive terms of office. And we talked about how that came about after FDR was elected 4 times in the mid-1900s, early 1900s. The 19th Amendment allows women the right to vote, according to the Constitution. The 13th Amendment, which is one of the Civil War amendments, the 13th Amendment is the amendment that bans slavery officially in the United States. And the 12th Amendment is the amendment that sets up the current status for how we elect the President of the United States. So there you have the items that you're going to need to know for the Unit 7 test. Again, make sure you look at that Venn diagram so you know the difference between the federal, the state, and the shared powers. And then also check out that flowchart on how a bill becomes a law. Make sure you know the terms. Double check yourself on the amendments, and you should be in great shape. Now, for those of you listening outside of class, I have a special offer for you here. If you're listening to this outside of class, please email me at my school email address, and in the actual email, say that you listen to the podcast and that the music in the background is a tune by the name of Mad Flava. And if you do that, I'll add 10 points on to your test grade, just kind of a little bonus for going above and beyond and listening to the podcast outside of the classroom. So I hope this helped a lot. Let me know if it does. Again, we'll continue to do this if you guys are listening to it and it's helping you guys out. Otherwise, good luck, and we'll see you in class. Bye.
We'll be right back.